Welcome to the F4 Podcast, where your hosts, Brian, Brooke, Charles, and Vanessa, discuss all things faith, family, friends, and fitness. What is F4? Sometimes it's a glimpse into how we navigate the world, and sometimes it's a deep dive into how we handle the four main areas of our lives. If you want to have a healthier relationship with God, family, friends, and yourself, this podcast is for you. Thank you for joining us as we unpack this episode.
Welcome to episode 22 of the F4 Podcast. We haven't met. I'm Charles Giddens. I'm one of the F4 hosts, and I want to thank you for listening and watching our podcast. If you could follow us on Instagram and like and share the podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. We're on a variety of platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Google, Pocket, Public Radio, Breaker, Anchor, and now YouTube. If you want to be a sponsor of the show, you can message us on Instagram, Facebook, or via email at f4ncpodcast@gmail.com. I'm joined today by the standard F4 people, my incredible wife, Vanessa, and our awesome, fabulous friends, Brian and Brooke Marston.
Hello.
Hello. So today we're going to talk about an issue that seems to come up over and over again with me, my family, friends, and almost everyone we come into contact with in some capacity. And I'm talking about excuses. You know, the I don't have time to do X, I don't have the money to do X, I wish I could do what you do, but the great thing about today is I'm going to get to roast myself as much as anyone at this table, and I'm excited to process through this as I think if we could free ourselves from excuses we tell ourselves throughout our life, we could better become the person that we really want to be. And to start this off, James Clear, and a lot of you probably have read this book from James Clear, but he's the author of the book Atomic Habits, and he says that every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become. I love that statement so much. I think if we could do it, it would be awesome. But I guess that might be an excuse again. So without further ado, I think as we look at that as a backdrop today, I want to jump right in and ask you guys a very easy question. It should spark some dialogue. And this doesn't have to be your personal statement. It could be anything, people you've heard, anything you've experienced over your life. But I want you to hit me with some excuses that you've heard or you've said yourself throughout the course of your life. Anybody up?
I'm too busy.
I love that one.
I'm too old.
But you're the youngest at the table.
I'm too young.
There you go. Oh, well, I like that. That's good.
How about this one, Brooke?
I'm too short.
Yep.
You probably never said that.
All right.
I'm not built that way.
I don't know.
You're built different.
She sure is.
Charles turned red on that one.
I did.
I've heard people say that. I don't know that I've used that as an excuse, but I hear that a lot.
Yeah, like, I wish I could have Vanessa's butt.
Yeah, it's a goal.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how.
I don't know how. That's a good one.
You don't know how that's a goal?
Yeah. Thank you. No, it's an excuse.
She's coming to my rescue.
I was.
Oh, okay. There is a beeping now that says rescue. Rescue me.
It's the crock pot. Roast is done.
The pot roast.
Sorry. Pot roast.
We're having pot roast later. Sorry.
He's like, that beeping noise is driving me crazy.
Kind of like the alarm clock you told this morning.
That was driving me crazy. Mine was a Seinfeld reference, but that's a really old reference. Speaking of being too old.
How about I'm too big? I said that before. I'm too big.
You have. You have the pictures to prove it.
I do. I do have the pictures to prove it. Or how about I'm not smart enough? Mm-hmm. I used to tell myself that a lot. We'll get to that in a minute, but I used to tell myself that a lot growing up. What else?
You said the biggest ones mm-hmm. that we hear all the time in the very beginning. I don't have time. I don't have money. I have said I don't have the patience. I have used that as an excuse mm-hmm. on multiple occasions, particularly when it involves the child. Mm-hmm. I will say I don't have the patience for that.
I've heard people say, I don't know how.
Hmm.
Or I can't. Or I'm too tired. That could apply in a lot of situations.
Oh, good grief.
How about I might get hurt?
That's yep, good.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Could also apply to our situations.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Wow.
He started it.
He always
that is also
it.
A great excuse.
As my nieces said one time when they were younger, they would say, speaking of their other cousins, they would say, hers started it. So thanks for taking me back to that memory.
Hers.
Hers started it.
Such a great use of English.
Oh, that's fantastic.
How about I'm scared?
Oh, yeah. That one takes a little bit of guts to admit, though. Hmm.
And sometimes I don't know that that's an excuse so much as a preface sometimes for people. Because to your point, it takes a lot of guts to admit that and to say, I'm taking a step back for a second because I'm scared. Doesn't mean I'm not going to do it. Doesn't mean I'm not going to try. It just means I'm taking a second.
That's different, though.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm agreeing.
How about this? I'm afraid of failing. Could I replace afraid with scared?
Mm.
Is that an excuse or is it a reason?
Well, that would be a whole nother conversation, I think. And maybe this is the conversation we need to have, is the difference between a reason and an excuse. Mm-hmm. And what is valid and what is invalid.
We might be getting to that. I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. Well,
maybe not. I think, you know, if we want to unpack that now, I think it's great.
Let's do it.
Yeah, go ahead. So what's the difference? What do you think the difference is since you brought it up?
Well, I mean, I think I think it probably has to do with how, where you are in the process of processing it. So to Vanessa's point, if you are admitting, I'm afraid, maybe that's the reason that you're not going for something in the moment. And it isn't an excuse saying that you're never going to try it. It's just a reason behind what you're thinking and feeling, and maybe asking for support and input from people around you. And not so much a, I'm going to refuse to do this thing or take this step. Now, could someone else interpret a reason as an excuse and assume that you are making an excuse? I think yes. Could I also deceive myself into, could I be saying, oh, well, that's the reason that I'm doing this, when really it's an excuse? I think there's a fine line, and I'm not really sure where the line is, because I do think feelings are involved in it.
And I think you actually hit the nail on the head when you said deceiving myself. That's the crux of it right there. An excuse is a lie. I know you're going to touch on that part of it, but it's really an opportunity for us to deceive ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lie that it is. It's a lie that we tell ourselves. And when people around us allow us to make excuses, they're allowing us to lie to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes you may think it's a reason until you have people around you that help you see that it's not a reason. Or it might be a very valid reason. You may have some really valid reasons. You might not have enough money. That might be a reality that's not an excuse. It just is a reality.
So you're speaking to the value of community and either helping you discern whether something is an excuse or not, or is it a valid reason? And then you can also, like, speaking of community, you could have a community around you that actually helps support your excuse to stay stuck in what you're doing and not rise above it or step out of it. So community can cut either way.
100%.
And that's what I heard you say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think reasons can be valid, right? I think we can all to your point, I don't have enough money. Well, look, at the end of the day, I don't have enough money to go buy a Ferrari. Okay, well, that's valid. Is it still an excuse?
Could you reprioritize your funds in such a way that that's no longer a reason?
No, there's not enough.
Maybe not for the Ferrari thing, but...
If I still want to use a house, I'd be live in a house and have indoor plumbing, no, it's not an option.
Well, I mean, again...
I will live in said Ferrari.
You could prioritize differently. I mean, I think... And to me, we'll get to this in a second. I think every excuse could be valid. I think in most cases. Hmm. I mean, you can rationalize away an excuse that we're going to talk about in a minute, but I think you can rationalize anything to be a valid reason. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you're right. I am too big. I weigh 300 pounds. I'm too big to get on that because it'll break. Okay, well, that's valid. But...
Do I have to stay that way?
Right. Or do I say, okay, right now that's a reason, but I'm using that as an excuse, which again goes back to the next piece we're going to talk about. But I think you can frame it up on both sides of the coin, really any way you want to. And I think to your point, Brian, I think it depends on who you have around you, but I also think it depends on your ability to be honest with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of us, at least with me anyway, that I get a little awry. Right, because I'm not always honest with myself.
Well, think about it. Every time you've done things that you regret, you were there for those things that you regretted. And so on some level, you had to convince yourself that it was worth doing what you did or saying what you said. So absolutely, we can sell ourselves on ideas and actions that don't take us where we need to go. So we have to have other people to challenge that. But if we don't allow other people to do it, then we're going to keep doing things that are regrettable.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, to me, and doing research for this podcast, I really came to the conclusion that excuses are just lies, right? So, at least for me, and you know, we can unpack this whether you agree with that or not, but for me, excuses are lies. And I think your point is every excuse that we tell ourselves is a lie designed to let us off the hook. Whether it's failure, whether it's doing something new, whether it's moving, growing, whatever that is. And I'm curious, have you guys ever seen that to be true? Has it played out in your life? Has it played out in other people's lives around you? I've got a funny one but that I'll share in a minute. But what do you guys think about that? I mean, are excuses lies? And are they designed to let us off the hook?
I would say they can be lies. I process this question, and I think it's a really good statement/question that I think excuses are indicators, that they indicate what we actually believe. And that could be what we believe about God, what we believe about ourselves, and what we believe about others.
Explain more what you're thinking behind that.
Well, for instance, if I were to, let's say, trust God with everything that I am, what would I not do that I felt like he was leading me to do? And what would I not do when I saw it, let's say, revealed in his word, believing that his word reveals his will? What would, if I was trusting without reservation, what would stop me to see something that, oh, this is black and white, and it's confirmed by other scripture? What would stop me if I trusted him wholeheartedly? Nothing. And what I realize is I'm in process, because sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't know if I want to do that. Oh, that's uncomfortable. I think I'm going to have an excuse. So I think it's an indicator as to what I actually believe, or where I am in the process of how I view God, myself, and others. That's just one example.
I think it's a great example.
Like, if I believe that God gave, it was giver of everything that I had, and let's talk about tithing. You know, in church world, when you hear tithing, some people are like, that is great. I want to honor God with the first 10% of my wealth. But you, other people hear that, and they don't hear it the same way. They're like, they make excuses as to, well, that was Old Testament. or, you know, I can't do that right now. Well, why can't you do it right now? Well, I mean, there are a lot of questions, there are a lot of answers we could come up, you know, to that question with, but it's like, if I really believe this to be true, what would stop me from doing it?
So not the example I was going to give, but it's funny that you bring that up, and I think you're probably smiling for the same reason, but
I don't know. I don't know if I am or not.
You and I had a conversation, I'm sure you remember this, at a Starbucks, well, long years ago. Well, I guess it would have been 2016, 17?
17. 6 years ago.
Yeah, 6 years ago, almost 7 years ago now, where I came to you and I said, I need to talk to you because I've lost my job. I've lost my income. And I don't feel like I can give to the church anymore. And I was panicked. I was having a crisis. I mean, you and I talked about it. I said, I got to talk to Brian. I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how this is going to play out. So it's funny that, and you're right. And at that point, I stopped giving temporarily. I mean, I stopped giving. Now, fast forward to 6 years later, when we're broker now than we were then, like way broker. But we give 10% to everything we do. I mean, it's just what happens. And it's to your point, if you really believe it, like, I don't know, 6 years ago, did I really believe? I mean, I think I did, but obviously my actions didn't show that I did.
That's why I would say they're an indicator.
Of being in process.
Of being in process, but where you actually
where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's both and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're all in process. None of us are absolutely 100% sold out to everything that God has ever said. And none of us have arrived or at perfection, a place of perfection. So excuses just indicate where we are. And if we can see it that way, then I actually think we have a chance to grow.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Are they a lie that's designed to get us off the hook?
Well, I think if we lean into them that way, then they can. I mean, I think Brian brings up an excellent point that it's an indicator. But if you choose to then say, well, this indicates this is just the way I am, uh-huh. which could be an excuse.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, really what you're saying at that point is, this is how I am, and this is how I'm always going to be. And then I think it's a lie then that you've agreed with that then, yes, gets you off the hook for doing anything differently than what you've done.
Yep.
I think it's funny that you mentioned the word agree. It's a lie that you agree with. When I was reading the notes for today, I thought of the book, The Four Agreements, and we've all talked about this book before, and it's not a Christian book. It actually comes from like ancient Mayan principles, but a lot of them would hold water. If you break it down from a Christian perspective, it holds water.
Sure.
And the agreements are, the four agreements are, be impeccable with your word. Don't make assumptions. Always do your best. And I'm forgetting the fourth one. But be impeccable with your word. Always do your best. Don't make assumptions. I brought the book down here. I knew this was going to happen. Oh, and don't take it personally. Yeah. So I think a lot of the excuses that we make...
The hardest one. That's the hardest one.
That's the hardest one. A lot of the excuses that we make, the lies that we agree to believe, can stem from taking it personally. And then when you tell yourself the lie and you believe it, you're not being impeccable with your word. So I think sometimes if you stop and say, okay, what's about to come out of my mouth? I don't have time for that. Stop. Do I really not have time for it, or am I not allotting my time correctly? So an excuse is an agreement that we make with ourselves, mm-hmm. whether it's a lie. And I think most often it is a lie. An excuse is a lie that we tell ourselves or that we've been told and we agree to believe. And it allows us to not always do our best. sometimes giving your best effort is not what you want to do. Mm. That was me this morning. I was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm tired. You know, but.
But I would say that you being tired was somewhat valid based on the fact that you drove probably 11 or 12 hours yesterday and in traffic, and you did something that was emotionally draining to come into the gym and expect that you're going to be bouncing off the walls with energy and excitement, I think would be an unrealistic expectation. I think to say that I'm tired is an indicator of what you experienced this past week and even the day before.
Sure. And I'm not saying that I was going about it making excuses. I'm just saying,
I didn't hear you say that.
I'm just saying that I, like this morning, I didn't give my best. That wasn't my best. I did give up on my best.
You could have done better.
I could have done better.
In spite of the circumstances. Correct. Of what you're saying.
Correct.
That makes a lot of sense.
I didn't verbalize an excuse necessarily. I just said I'm done.
Yeah.
But I let myself off the hook of doing my best.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think it is an agreement. Mm-hmm. An excuse is an agreement that we make with ourselves.
Okay. So years ago, I had the pleasure of attending a seminar. Actually, it was one of the awesome seminars I've been able to attend over my life. But with an incredible guy that talked to us in a group setting, and he's an author, but he's a lot more. And he's the author of this book, actually, Eric Weinmeier. It's called The Adversity Advantage. And here's the thing. He's an adventurer. He's an author. He's a motivational speaker. He's the first blind person to reach the summit of Mount Everest. I mean, think about that for a second. He's blind. He went up Everest. He was born in 68 in New Jersey. He lost his vision at the age of 13 due to a very rare eye disease. And despite all of that, he found a way to really overcome it in the outdoor world, and now is parlayed into teaching and talking and writing. But he has done all seven summits. He's one of the only people, I mean, think about the small select people across the country that have actually summit all seven of the tallest peaks in the world, and he's blind. So think about that for a second, right? So on top of that, he's written a lot of books. He's a Paralympian, so he actually does all kinds of other stuff, and he's a co-founder of a nonprofit called No Barriers. And in the book, The Adversity Advantage, I thought it was important, and what really kind of led to some of why I wanted to talk about this, there's a lot of reasons that have come up recently, but it took me back to this book, and I read this book two or three times at this point over the course since I've gotten it. But they have what's called an adversity quotient, AQ, almost like an EQ, but an AQ. And it measures an individual or organization's ability to navigate and overcome adversity effectively. And I think when we talk about adversity, we're talking about navigating excuses, right? Things that we're trying to overcome, and we're always trying to overcome excuses. It's built on three pillars, and I think it's really awesome, and I want to talk about this. The first one is control, and I get that we're really not in control of anything. I understand that, but we can control some things about our situations, that I think we need to, that we could put off, but they talk about it in this book, and it's the ability to take charge of one's response to adversity and make constructive choices. We can absolutely take control of our choices, so that's something that we can do. We can't control our situations, but we can control how we react to them. The second one is ownership, right? Embracing adversity is an opportunity for growth and taking responsibility for one's actions or the action of an organization, whether it's your problem in the organization or not. And the last one, is reach, expanding one's comfort zone and pushing the boundaries to achieve more, right? So I love all three of those. I think if we could frame things up differently when we are faced with what we perceive as an excuse, if we could look at what our role in that is, I think we'd be completely different and changed. And Eric lives his life completely opposite from what an excuse is. I mean, the guy's incredible, and I'm sure he has his own excuses. He's not free of excuses, you know. But at least from a bigger standpoint, he's figured out a way past those that his condition has basically caused him to navigate. And we don't have that option. Like, I didn't lose my sight. I've had to overcome it. There's other things I've had to overcome, but not to that level. and he talks about excuses making us an a victim. And I think excuses can make us a victim in a lot of ways. And I think if we really frame it up, we could say, "I'm too slow." Well, you're making yourself a victim now because you're not fast. You weren't born fast like somebody down the street, like Brian. I'm not as fast as Brian. Well, that's an excuse, and this now made me a victim because I'm not like Brian. And I think our world revolves around victimhood at this point in a lot of ways. And we're let off the hook again because of that in a lot of situations. Have you guys, and when you live that out, giving excuses allows control to go to someone else or something else. You're not in control anymore when you agree or listen to the excuse in your head and you agree with it. You've then advocated responsibility and ownership of that excuse to someone else. I'm not fast enough. Well, my parents didn't, they weren't fast either. So that's their fault, right? Or I didn't have the ability to train like somebody else. So that's an excuse that I've given control to somebody else, not me. Or I can't control my diet because I'm predisposed to X, Y, and Z, you know, or I have Crohn's disease, so I have to eat a certain way. So I can't be thin because I've got to make sure I watch out for this, that, and the other. Have you guys seen this play out, that idea of victimhood and giving control to something or someone else? Have you seen that play out in your life or someone close to you? Is anybody having a good example of that?
I think it'd be good for Brooke to answer because she didn't get a lot of opportunity for the last question.
Yeah.
I don't have something that comes to mind readily on that one. Like, that's a good example that would illustrate the point and wouldn't be oversharing. Something may come to me, but I don't have a great example that has come to me. When you say that, are you saying it because you think I should be thinking of something?
No, you didn't share a lot on the last question. That's all.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was that simple.
So let me frame that up differently for you then. So you are 4'11", right?
Yes.
Half. 4'11" and a half. You're right.
Nine tenths.
So
yeah. Don't steal that from her.
Sorry, I'm not stealing that from you. You're not 5 feet tall.
No, I am not.
So you're on the shorter stature side.
Mm-hmm.
Were you going to say spectrum?
No.
Okay.
So I would think in your life, it would be very easy, and I could be wrong, and maybe this is where you're different, but I would think it would be very easy for you to allow your height to be an excuse in giving that control of your height to your parents, to the world, to whatever, in a way that would make it seem like. And not that you've ever, I don't hear you play the victim card. That's not necessarily what I'm saying, but I could see where I would, if I was in your shoes, to go, oh, well, yeah, I can't do the same things that somebody else does because I'm short, because I'm 4'11". I'm not 5'7", like Vanessa.
Mm-hmm.
So things are going to be different for me.
Yeah, I mean, and I think things are different for me, but.
Like when a dish is really high. She has to ask me to get it for her.
Or I climb on the counter, you know? So, but to me, that's never really bothered me. I will say, you know, you use the example of being fast. I would say where my height has been a thing. I think for a while I was satisfied with running at a certain pace because my thought process was, well, I'm not tall. So this is probably as fast as I can go. My legs are short. And it's true that they're not, I mean, I am limited by the length of my legs to a degree.
But if you move them really fast.
Kind of like a cartoon, you know?
Yes.
But I have discovered that I can be faster than I thought I could be by putting in training and work and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I can see where. Thankfully, I have a good support system around me, so I don't know that I've ever felt like a victim in that space, even though I think I easily could and could have, but I had people around me pushing me and not letting me settle for. Well, and then there was that time where I hurt my shoulder and basically all I could do was run, and you made me run fast, and so then go faster. But what I learned from that was like, oh, well, I mean, I guess I can go faster and I might not ever be the fastest. But, you know.
Yeah.
But I could see where that could potentially be. Mm-hmm. Because I think for a while I was very much satisfied with a certain speed level just because, well, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I've seen plenty of people blame a diagnosis on why they are either unkind or unable to do something to justify poor behavior.
Elaborate on that a little bit.
I've had people who have said, I am this way based on a diagnosis from a doctor. Whether or not it was a valid one or not, that remains to be seen. But because the doctor said that you are this, you are in this category, that you're going to have this subsequent, I don't know, life, or you're going to act this way, or you're, in other words, at least they have drawn the conclusion that they should be let off the hook when either they make poor decisions or treat people poorly. And I don't know, that may not be elaborating to the degree that you want me to, but I'm trying to be somewhat
sure.
Well, yeah, if you take it to like a medical diagnosis of even something like ADHD, to say, oh, well, I have ADHD, so I can't concentrate, or whatever, you almost can. And I'm not saying that if you have ADHD, it isn't a challenge to overcome, mm-hmm. yep. but there are plenty of people who see that and say, I may have to work harder at this, or I may have to set certain things in place so that I'm able to concentrate. But some people will say, oh, well, I can't do that. It's my ADHD. So
and,
I can't.
And if you challenge that, then what happens?
Then you are mean for, mm-hmm. for not understanding how hard it is to have ADHD.
Yeah.
So
culturally speaking, that's all around us.
And I just picked, I'm not trying to pick on anybody. Well, I'm just
saying. I can pick on myself in that situation. I was diagnosed with general anxiety disorder 4 years ago, I don't remember when it was. Y'all probably remember more than I do. It was a bad time in my life. But I used the fact that I had anxiety to that level as a justification for spinning out of control at times and taking it out on her. Like, that was just a justification. I'm like, well, that's just what I've got anxiety. It's my anxiety. So she's going to have to learn to deal with that. No. Like, no. That's not fair. That's not how that works. Like, I've got to take responsibility for my actions in those situations, even though they're very difficult to control when they happen. It's still my actions. It's still how I'm processing things. And it would be very... It has been at the time, especially years ago when it first started happening. I didn't really understand it. It was very easy to say, "Well, you're just gonna deal with it." And I think we had conversations like that. Yeah, it's not good, but I did it. I mean, look, I told you that I'm gonna roast myself this podcast, but
bam, roasted.
Right? I mean, you know, it's not the way I wanted to be, but I used that, to your point, a medical diagnosis as what I thought was a valid excuse, and you could argue that it's valid. There's some wiring off somewhere, or I haven't dealt with enough emotions to process how I'm dealing with things. Mm-hmm. And that's valid. There's something there that I needed to work on, but it's not valid to say, I'm going to, you know, take that out on her or take that out on my friends. That's not valid, but that's how I treated it at the time. I don't do that now, but it very much was. And I expected people to just go, oh, okay, it'll be okay because he's struggling.
It's because of the GAD.
Yes. What do you got?
Well, if I speak up, it's going to get a little heavy.
Okay.
It's going to get a little heavy.
It's okay.
I think my brother is a prime example.
Ah.
My brother was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis and had a pretty rough go of it for the first, you know, couple years after his diagnosis. And I mean, he was an adult. He was married, children, and everything was, he was dealing with it, I guess, to an extent, until my mom died. And when my mom died, he really just gave up and refused to deal with anything and basically allowed himself to die, is what it amounted to. And he very much was a victim, not only of the disease, but of circumstances surrounding my mother's death, and he was left alone, even though he had a wife and kids, you know, that depended on him. He became a victim to the point that he didn't even care. He didn't try. There was no try. And I have known other people with MS that have overcome so much and have chosen to, oftentimes with God's help, have chosen to overcome and to embrace the adversity. It's not saying it's all going to be smooth sailing, but my brother didn't do that at all. And so and I think a lot of it, his playing the victim card was very selfish in a lot of ways, because there was a lot of stuff that he just didn't want to deal with. And so, oh, I have MS. Look at me. I can't. And it ended up being detrimental to his family and, you know, so.
Yeah.
And ultimately he lost his life. And I really do think it was, I mean, it's always God's choice, but it was an acceptance of, I can't. So.
He made an agreement.
Yeah. He chose to agree to being a victim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember we were early married at that point, and I remember being very frustrated coming out of those situations and those conversations and those interactions, family interactions that we would have. And I remember almost getting into fights with you about that. Like, I don't understand. It's not me, and again, it wasn't my diagnosis, but I remember that being extremely hard.
And I cannot fathom myself, you know, waking up one day and not being able to use your right leg. And then 2 weeks later, oh, look, your leg works again, but now your left arm is useless. Or I've lost control of my bladder for 2 weeks. Like, I can't imagine that. I can't imagine, basically, at least at that point in time, I don't know how much better it is. It's been a little bit of time since I've really worked with somebody with MS. I did a lot of training, a lot of dog training for people with MS based on my experiences with my brother. But it's been a while. When I was in the thick of it, there were a lot of people who were essentially guinea pigs. I mean, all of the medications were new and different, and let's see if this infusion works. Let's see if you give yourself these shots, you know, once a week or whatever, if you put yourself on the paleo diet. But speaking of that, that's just something that was a simple thing that my brother chose not to do. You know what I mean? That was a thing that I'm not the only one that talked to him about it. I talked to him about it. His doctors talked to him about it. Other people talked to him about it. That was a very simple thing. All that required was him shopping differently. And he couldn't do it.
Simple.
He wouldn't do it.
But
he
not
wouldn't
easy.
Do it. That, I didn't say it was easy.
Right.
I never said it was easy. But he wouldn't do it. He didn't even try. So I don't.
So his excuses were an indicator of what he actually believed.
Yes.
Well, it's going to make this next question pretty easy, maybe. So why do we use excuses? And I'll give you guys some examples. Is it because we're afraid of a result? Right? We're afraid of changing our diet and becoming better. Is it we're afraid of taking action? I'm afraid of, again, changing my diet. Is it we're afraid of reactions from other people. Like, why do you guys think we actually make, like, why do we make excuses? I know it's such an easy question, but it's so hard.
Well, if we're afraid of failing, then I think so much of that is probably grounded in people pleasing.
Hmm.
Because if I'm afraid of failing, I'm afraid of what other people, how they perceive my failure. So for me, that's a big thing. Like, I don't want to be perceived as a failure. So why try if I think I'm going to fail? I think that happens with a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think people are also afraid of succeeding.
Hmm. Unknown, right?
Yeah. And I think I'm both. I'm afraid of failing and I'm afraid of succeeding. I'm afraid of both. Because either way, for me, results in attention. And I don't necessarily, I don't want attention for being bad, and I don't really want attention for being good. I just want to, like,
blend in.
Blend in. And so being afraid, being successful means changes, because then people look at you. You may have a target on your back. You may have expectations placed on you that you're not ready for, or you don't think you're ready for. Hmm. So, but I think fear is behind both of those, and probably some people pleasing on both sides of that as well.
I would concur.
But fear of the unknown and fear of change and what it's going to cost. What does failure cost me? What does success cost me? Am I ready to, you know, because until it happens, you don't always know what it's going to cost you.
Mm.
And even thinking about your brother, I mean, he could have been thinking, well, what if I change my diet and it still doesn't work and I'm still this miserable? And so why try?
Yeah.
You know, I at least know what's happening this way. And I'm not saying it was the right choice, but I see plenty of people unwilling to make a change because they don't know what it's going to cost, and there's no guarantee of a change of outcome.
Do you think that's, and it's funny that in this book they talk about control, but do you think that's because people are afraid to give up control? Because even though I'm miserable, I'm in control of that. And if I choose to do something different, I'm not in control anymore.
I had a conversation that was revolving around what we're talking about this morning. Or yesterday morning. It was yesterday morning. My days are running together. But that, I think our excuses can be like pets, because they're comfortable.
Hmm.
You know, they provide some degree of comfort. And I think it goes really well with what you're talking about. Because for me, when you were talking, I thought, boy, that's really true for you. Because when you first came into the gym, it was just like she showed up. And she's a cute little pet. And if you did anything good, it was just like, oh, yay. She did something impressive. And it wouldn't even be all that impressive. But what happened over a couple years when you continued to show up and then improve, once you became competition based on success, that happened slowly over time.
It wasn't cute anymore.
It wasn't cute anymore.
No, not cute anymore.
And then there are people who were cheering your progress that no longer cheered for your progress.
Yeah.
They then begin to make up reasons why you had success to be detrimental to you.
Or even cheer for my failure, which, let's face it, it's failure every single day. And on one, you know, to some degree. But you're right. It's funny that you brought that up, because I actually was thinking about it the other day. I was vacuuming the floor, and I was like,
"You're like, that really sucks."
Maybe it was the vacuuming that made. But I actually was thinking about that. I was like, I remember when it was like, "Oh, yay!" It's funny that you said that, because there are people very clearly in my mind that I was thinking about. And being like, oh, yay, look what she did.
They championed you.
Yeah, yeah.
Until they didn't.
Right.
Huh.
I watched it.
I synced it.
It's like, you used to cheer for her, and now you don't seem so happy. What happened?
I can't, I'm not speaking for anybody but me, but I think most of the time when I make an excuse, it's because the alternative is going to be hard.
That's very simple.
or you think it's going to be hard.
Right.
Yeah.
It's going to be, and usually it's going to be hard because it's going to interfere with something I would rather be doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's hard. It's not even the gym, notwithstanding. Those hard things are just hard. Yeah. Those are just hard. But other life things, it's usually because it's a hard thing and it's hard for me to prioritize it over something else I would rather be doing.
Yeah. So, and we kind of all touched on this on some, but I'm curious, what excuse have you guys used personally that you've allowed to play out in your life in some form or fashion? And did you overcome it? And if you did, how did you overcome it?
So one example that I've thought of is I don't really love conflict or conversations that feel like they're going to be conflict oriented. So there are plenty of times where I won't speak up in situations like that, and the excuse is it won't do any good. So. And sometimes it probably doesn't. Probably is better to keep my mouth shut. It probably does more good to, you know, to keep my mouth shut. But I think there are plenty of times where I have not spoken up because I didn't think it would do any good, or that was my excuse to not step into a conversation that felt uncomfortable. Not being willing to take that risk of things. Could they potentially be better on the other side? Maybe, but it's going to be hard. I'm going to be uncomfortable. So the excuse becomes, it won't do any good anyway. I'm better off keeping my mouth shut. Have I overcome that? Sometimes yes, and sometimes no. It depends on the day, and it depends on the topic, and it depends on the person. I think I'm better than I used to be. I definitely have moments where I feel myself say, no, I'm going to step into this. I don't like it. I'm doing it anyway. But I think that's one... that's an excuse that I think is pretty common for me. It won't do any good.
Do you think that that is a sort of a piggyback of failure?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I do.
If it won't do any good, you've failed at accomplishing
a restorative relationship. Correct. Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever you set out to do.
Mm-hmm.
How about you two?
I defer to Vanessa.
I just said, I talked about mine. About hard. It's hard because it's hard. An excuse, I make excuses all the time because stuff is hard.
So one I've used is, and that I'm trying not to use, is I'm too busy to do the things that I should be doing, or to, I don't know, that's really it. And so I know we've been talking about cell phone use a lot with church, and if you really go in and you look at your screen time usage, and you see how many minutes you spend each day on a particular app, it's really like it doesn't lie. And so there have been times where I've said I don't have the time or I'm too busy to do certain things. And then now that I'm really trying to take inventory of that, I realize, okay, I have a greater capacity. And I've made excuses over the years that weren't valid because it was easier just to touch an app on my phone and find an escape that really didn't take me where I wanted to go ultimately, that really wasn't satisfying, but in the immediate, it provided a relief from feeling the stress of whatever hard thing that I felt like was on the other side of what I really needed to do. And so I'm really trying not to do that at this stage. And so you asked the question, why did you make that excuse? I think sometimes it's pride. Sometimes it's selfishness. Sometimes it's people pleasing. Sometimes it's fear. Sometimes, you know, I just don't want to do something hard. And then you also asked the question, did you ever come it? And I would say that I haven't fully overcome any excuse, but I've made progress. And it's like we've talked about in the past that it's not really about perfection, that practice doesn't make you perfect. That is a misnomer. It's not an accurate statement. It's practice makes progress. And so in trying to practice, like, how can I discipline my life to take me to where I want to go, where I'm actually living out my values, living out what I would say I believe, and living out a vision that I have for the rest of my life and what I hope is, like, even said about me at a funeral, I'm able to more align my actions to that as I think that way and don't make the excuses of I'm too busy or I don't have time. And so I think that's the big thing, is aligning my life to my values, my beliefs, and my vision for life, and really thinking about the end helps me to overcome and I would say make progress in the areas I've made excuses.
Yeah, that's great.
But I have to keep that in mind. And one of the ways I do that is I have it on paper and I try to revisit that every day.
Yeah. It's good. I mean, for me, I use a lot of excuses. I always have. Again, I think I'm wired that way. Anyway.
Is that an excuse?
Sounds like one to me.
Sounds like it.
Well, I'm thinking that's probably the case. It's even winked.
Yeah. The biggest one I think I haven't overcome it, that I've worked on over the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, 5 or 6 years, was my ability to understand the Bible, understand God's Word, enough so that I would always say, well, I can't do that because I don't memorize verses, or I didn't have that upbringing to do Bible drills, and I didn't do this, and I didn't do that. I've always said every excuse under the sun, and I've put people up on pedestals, I think, that maybe in certain ways should have been put on pedestals, in certain ways they shouldn't have been. But I've always put myself beneath them in that world to say, I'm not good enough. I'm not a good enough Christian. I don't know the Bible well enough. God doesn't seem to talk to me the way he does other people. Yeah, I have every excuse under the sun. And I think when I finally wrestled with that a couple years ago and said, enough, I've been able to get through some things and have breakthroughs to where I do think I'm smart enough to understand it. Can I recite scripture the way some people can at this point in my life? No. I'm not able to recall that at this point. I will eventually get there. It may take another 15 or 20 years. I don't know. But there is a lot of scripture I can recite. But, you know, becoming the person that God wants me to be and getting past the excuse of saying, well, you're not smart enough. You don't understand it enough. You don't have the time to read the Bible. You don't have time to go to school. You don't have time to really do deep dives on you know, whatever book you're reading. And I say book, I'm, you know, the part of the Bible. You don't have time for that was an excuse. And for me, that's been one of the biggest things that I feel like I haven't overcome to your point. Like, I'm cured of that. But I do think I've prioritized it to the point where it's not an excuse anymore. And it's something that I thrive in instead of letting it say no.
Awesome. Yeah. I love it. I think comparison is a real thief.
Yeah. It's easy to do, though.
You know, God has made you uniquely the way you are, and you've had the experiences you've had for a reason, and you bring something to the table that no one else does. And so to believe that to be true, I think helps you to walk forward in confidence, knowing that He is taking you into whatever's next, and He's prepared you for it, which I think is really well with some scripture that you had in the show notes about Moses and...
Man, I love it. And I put this in there because Moses, to me, especially when you think about what he was called to do, and you're like, man, you told the person, you told your creator that you can't speak, that you're like, really? I mean, and you look at it, and part of what I put in here is in Exodus 4, 10 through 17, and Moses had been charged to talk to, you know, to lead the people out of Egypt and to talk. And Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in past nor since you've spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouth? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight and makes them or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak, and I'll teach you what to say. And then the goofball says, pardon your servant, Lord, please send someone else. Like, dummy, like, and I don't know how many times, like, and I read that, I've read it over and over again, but, like, that's the ultimate excuse. Like, to me, I was just like, wow. I mean, and then the fact that, and God gets angry, but the fact that he relents and uses Aaron and uses a lot of other things to kind of work through that is amazing to me. Like, because I look at that sometimes and I think about with Parker and I'm like, excuse after excuse after excuse, and I get frustrated. But God didn't do that. God didn't do that. I mean, he got angry, like, and we know he got angry because it says he got angry. But he was able to get past that and work through that situation with Moses.
It's funny that today, the part of my Bible reading today was in John 5. And it was just funny. When I read it, I laughed out loud because the very beginning of that chapter is about the man who is lame at the pool of Bethesda. And Jesus comes along and says, do you want to get well? And the man says, well, I'm not very fast, I can't walk, and I don't have anybody here to help me. So every time the water starts, I can't get there. And to your point, Jesus doesn't say, well, sucks for you. Those are some really good reasons. He looks at him and he says, stand up, pick up your mat. He healed him. He didn't wait for the lame man to get a better attitude. All the man had was excuses. And then Jesus still heals him in that moment, and he gets up and goes. And then, of course, there's all the kinds of trouble because it was healing on the Sabbath and all that. But it just was funny to me that was the right out of the gate this morning was the first thing that I read.
I was going to put both. As I'm putting together the notes, that's the first example that came to mind. I'm like, oh, I got to do that. And then I'm like, oh, you know what? But I like this other one better. So I put that in there, but it absolutely was part of my thought process. And you're right, it's a perfect example.
Yeah, it was so funny because I knew, you know, Moses was in the in the notes, but I was like, I just laughed. I was like, huh, that's today.
That's funny. That's funny, God. Yeah. It's amazing that you put that in front of me today.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? What do you guys think about that story in Exodus when Moses is called?
To me, God's grace is evident. He didn't deserve it, which we don't deserve grace. But God made a way when Moses didn't trust in the word of the Lord. Because he says, I will help you speak and I will teach you what to say. And what that shows me when Moses responds with the excuse he responded with is that he didn't trust God. He trusted him to a degree. Had he trusted him, he would have been like, let's go. Nothing's going to stop us. But it was an indicator of where Moses was in his faith journey. And the Lord, I think, was angry because he wanted Moses to trust his heart and to trust that God was good, and Moses wasn't there yet. And it was like, ah. And he saw what Moses could become. And I think as a parent, that's what happens to us, as we see, you know, our kids don't always know that our heart is good toward them, and they don't know what they're going to become. And we have a perspective that they don't have. And I think the Lord had a similar perspective with Moses. But it's an incredible thing to see God's grace in the middle of that situation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it's part of what years ago kind of led me to even get into children's ministry to start with. Is like, I'm not equipped for this. I'm like, I don't know how many times we talked about it. I'm like, I don't know enough. Like, this is, and I remember conversations like, you'll figure it out. God will be there. He'll tell you what to do. It's fine. And he has, but yes, to your point, it was where I was then. Like, I remember those conversations and asking God, I'm like, God, like, and I almost felt like an imposter at the time, because I didn't know what I felt like I needed to know. And, you know, God clearly doesn't call the equipped, right? I mean, we've heard that over and over again. He equips who he calls. So, but it's hard when it happens, because you're like, and I get it with Moses. He's like, ah, really? Like me? I don't know. Like, so it's easy to get caught up in that, and it's easy to let excuses become part of who you are. And, you know, clearly he didn't deserve what he got. And, you know, God worked through that, and Aaron, both, and all of them. But, you know, I think it speaks to your point where you are, and an indicator. And I think sometimes we need to maybe, and I didn't even think about it until now, but really stop and go, okay, what is this an indication of? With our excuses. I've never done that. I've never what is really causing, what's causing this? And to your point, if you look at it as an indicator, it should cause pause to say, okay, this is something else. Got anything?
Nope.
Okay, good. All right, so last question. What are some of the ways you guys combat excuses in your life? Are there any tricks or verses or anything that's helped you overcome them?
When you had tricks in the question, I thought, silly rabbit.
Tricks are for kids.
Tricks are for kids. But that's a dated commercial.
Yeah, well, we're all old, most of us anyway.
Well, hey, I know that reference.
Awesome. Brooke, what do you think? Or how would you answer?
I don't know that it's any tricks. And I think probably the verses that would come to mind would depend on the situation or the scenario. Mm-hmm. But I do think that one of the practices that I've been working on developing more or leaning into is spending more thoughtful time in prayer, and really not taking for granted just things that happen, or just kind of accepting, oh, whatever happens, happens. But to go into, I mean, I know I referenced conversations before, but conversations, I think, are a big thing, because words have so much power. You know, Scripture talks about how there's life and death in the tongue. And so I think the things that we say are very important and have the power to really help someone or hurt someone, including ourselves. I think the things that we say can also hurt ourselves, mm-hmm. or really help ourselves. And so, but being really prayerful, thoughtful in prayer, and really asking for the Lord's guidance. You know, you talking about Moses and God saying, I will be with you. I will tell you what to say. I will speak for you. Jesus tells his disciples that all the time. Don't worry, when you go out and you go and you share my message, don't worry about what you're going to say. I'm going to give you the words. Other New Testament writers talk about when the time comes, God will tell you what to say. The Holy Spirit will be at work in you and helping you know what to say. So you see that over and over, Old and New Testament. You know that it's not necessarily a, you know, prepared speech that does the trick, you know, in a situation. It's being willing to be led by the Holy Spirit. And so going into conversations prayerfully, I would say is the trick for me to lean into the Holy Spirit, to let him be the one to guide my words. Am I 100% perfect in that? I do not think so. But I think in the last couple of months, I have experienced sort of a freedom in some of the conversations that I did not look forward to having. But because of leaning into him, I really do see how he did give me the words, how he did go before me in those conversations, and made a way. So anytime I think you have some, oh wow, like I had that conversation and God did what he said he was going to do, that becomes very faith building. So the next time is a little less scary. Like, oh, you did that before, let's do that again. And not, and staying in that place of humility, recognizing that it's not I'm getting better at this, it's the Lord is able to speak through me, not, oh wow, now I'm so great at difficult conversations. Does that make sense? So keeping that mindset of humility and continuing to lean into him and to really trust him. I think my trust is growing. Long ways to go, but that's how I would answer that question. I'm done.
Silly rabbit. So I think for me, one of the things that helps me and has helped other people is thinking in terms of the end in mind when it comes to combating excuses, but also the community piece that we referred to earlier. When you're in community that's healthy, people are going to challenge your excuses, or they're going to ask questions to clarify, is this really something that you should be saying right now, or do you need to push through and stop being a baby? Or do you need to stop being selfish? Or, you know, you may be being prideful, whatever it may be. So we need that community piece. From a scripture standpoint, I thought about Hebrews 13:5, that God will never leave us, he'll never forsake us, which comes from Deuteronomy 31:6. And then also in verse 8, where Joshua is being prepared for leadership. And that's where I'll never leave you, forsake you came from, that we then see replicated in Hebrews chapter 13. So knowing that God is with me, knowing that God is for me, knowing that God is present helps me then to walk in confidence. Even if I mess up, he's with me in the mess up. And so to know that, and that his grace is much like Moses experienced, if I really believe that, then what will I not do that I think I'm supposed to do? There are a couple other verses that came to mind that were, one was in the Old Testament also, Psalm 139, verses 7 through 10, where basically David is praying this prayer that we can't hide from God. we can try to go wherever, as far away from him as possible, but he is there. And so to know that he is there kind of goes in line with never will I forsake you or leave you. But then also in 1 Corinthians 10:13, the Apostle Paul writes that there's no temptation that God doesn't help us with. You know, they're all common to all of us. The temptations I experience, other people experience. The temptation to hide, the temptation to make an excuse, the temptation to not step into what God has made me to be, we all deal with that. But knowing that God is faithful and he gives me exactly what I need in that time of temptation is something that I can rest on. So when I'm in the right mind or the God-focused mind, that's when I'm less likely to make excuses that take me from being the person I want to be, that take me away. That's what I got.
I don't have any tricks.
Maybe I shouldn't have put tricks in there. Sorry.
I like tricks. I saw tricks, it made me happy.
I have no tricks.
I have this one card trick.
Yeah. I have no tricks up my sleeve.
I just thought of rabbits and coming out of hats.
I do think that if I'm in a healthy space and I'm cognizant of what I'm doing, I do try to say, okay, these words that are about to come out of my mouth, is this true or is this a lie that I'm allowing myself to believe that I'm agreeing with? I also, for a very, very, very long time, one of my favorite scriptures was Psalm 26:2. Prove me, O Lord, and try me, test my heart and my mind. So is this an adversity that I need to step into and do my best with, and leave all the excuses and my ego at the door? And there's also, I don't know what verse it is, but in Hebrews, run the race set out for you.
Mm-hmm. Hebrews 12.
Thank you. You know, this is, tackle each day as it comes. This is what has been put in your path for a reason. And I do think, to your point earlier, Brian, about community playing a huge role, I think if I'm in a healthy space and can lean into my community and my community is healthy and good for me, then I'm much more able to do that. I'm going to be less likely to let the excuses fly, and I'll lean into the people that do support me and hold me accountable more than I'll lean into the lie.
Mm-hmm. It's easier to be around people that tell us what we think we want to hear or that feels good. But then it's not.
Yeah, for me, community is huge in this area because, to your point, if you have the wrong community, you're going to be so messed up. Like, to hear that, oh, it's a, you know, I'll give an example. Oh, my husband cheated on me. Oh, well, you should do the same thing back to him. Like, a negative community. Like, what would that mean? And an excuse is, he did it to me, so I'm going to do it to him, right? The good community would be like, oh, let's process that. How do we work through that? How do we help each other work through that? And I think community, and that's an extreme example, obviously, that I hope no one listening to this has to deal with. But, you know, I do think there are times, and I'll give an example, me wrestling with my calling. If I didn't have you guys from a community standpoint, I don't know how to be doing what I'm doing, right? I probably would have believed some of the excuses that I was telling myself at the time. You know, that you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you don't have the background, you can't go to seminary, you can't write, you're a horrible writer, like you're going to have to write a bunch, you can't read very fast, you're going to have to read a ton. Like, there are so many things so many excuses that I was giving myself at the time, or you're not going to make any money the rest of your life, so you're screwed. So, like, you know what I mean? But, like, fortunately, I didn't have people around me that said, yeah, you're right, that's not what you want to do. I did have some tough love conversations, but they weren't steering me incorrectly. They weren't, you know, I don't think that. So I think community is huge. And we talk about it over and over again. You got to find the right people around you. Like, it's so, so, so important to find the right people around you. And to do community in life with people with a purpose, not just to go along. Like, I see, even at the gym, I see people doing things. I'm like, and they seem to have a very good close connection and community, but it's just, there's no direction to it. Like, it's, this is what we're going to do. And I'm not going to say anything else that would, but I'm like, well, it's great. You have someone, but is it real long? You know what I mean? Long term, is it really going to be a deep connection that if something goes horribly wrong, you're going to get the best advice you can and they're going to love you all the way through it? And I don't know that that's the case sometimes, you know, so community is important. Go ahead.
I just, from a romantic relationship standpoint, you made me think about my kids who are all, you know, they're between the ages of 17 and 22. And I say my kids, our kids. And
it depends. Are they doing bad things? And they could be yours.
That's how it works, right? But I want them to know their worth so that they don't settle for just having someone. Because there is this cultural lie that you're nobody if you don't have somebody who is your significant other.
Yeah.
And so for me, I feel like I'm trying to cast a vision for that. But man, culture conspires to say you've got to have somebody, you've got to have a significant other to be someone substantial. Or you've got to have a community. You got to be in, because we all want to be in.
Right.
But people settle for community that doesn't take them where ultimately they would say they want to go if they're thinking in terms of vision. And I feel like this is important, because when we have a community of people that won't allow us to sell ourselves short, whether it's romantic relationships or friendship, then we have the capability of hitting the bullseye on what we hope our life actually ends up being like and the story it ends up telling. Mm-hmm. So when you were talking, that came into my head.
Two things that came to my mind when you guys were talking. One, the difference between community and people to hang out with.
Well, wow, that's good.
Yeah.
You can have people that you're hanging out with, but you aren't really giving access to your life to where you're having conversations that lead to a purpose where they could be there for you in the really good things and in the things that are hard. So community, I think, is more than just people to hang out with. And to your point, I think a lot of times, because people don't want to be alone, they settle for people to hang out with, because community is a little bit harder. There's more vulnerability. You have to have hard conversations. Like, it takes a little more work.
You've never done that.
Right, to have access to parts of life. It's more fun just to stay on surface in the short term. It seems like to stay on surface and have somebody to hang out with, so you don't have to be by yourself on Friday night. When you were talking about like romantic relationships and having to have a significant other, it was the first time I ever have thought about that word significant, placing it on the person that you're in the relationship with, but it implies that you two are significant. Mm-hmm. And so even just the phrase has an implication of, I'm only significant if I have a significant other, because of that implication. And I'd never, until you were talking, I was like, oh my goodness, just even the words that we use, the language that we use, brings a meaning that then we begin living out the story because of how we are interpreting those, you know. And I mean, I know, like, significant other, because we don't want to say, you know, spouse or fiance or husband or wife. Right. I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, it just becomes a more generic way to say, and because relationship statuses are so complicated and I can't even understand what half of them are, but so we settle for terms like that. But I just think that the implication then is, it's an easy conclusion to jump to. If I don't have a significant other, then I'm not significant to someone else. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I appreciate that insight.
I mean, really, that could have spiraled down to everything that Paul said about marriage and husband and wife. And if you're not, you know, it's okay. Mm-hmm. In fact, most people aren't called to be married, but we've got that different. I mean, that's a whole another podcast.
That's a different podcast. It's a different podcast,
for a different day. I think the other things that helped me, you know, we talked about community. I think, to your point, prayer has been a massive help for me to get through some excuses, because I think when I really pray to God and really give it to Him, a lot of things come back, and a lot of the excuses are seen for what they are, and they almost stand out to me. Is like, oh, that's an excuse you've got to work through. That, you know, if you're not spending time in prayer, you're not always going to see. You don't always see those for what they are. And I think that's super important. And I think the other thing that you talked about, which is what I've come to the conclusion years ago or a couple years ago when I really wrestled with this, with the imposter syndrome, is knowing whose I am and knowing who made me and who I belong to. And I think when you're clear with that, and I really think if you understood that and you really could process that, and when you do, everything else kind of falls away because you get it. Like, then your worth is not tied up into something else. You don't need to make as many excuses because there's not as many excuses to make, because you're like, oh, well, God made me. I'm God's. He made me this way, and I belong to him, and nothing can take that away. Nothing can take that away. And I think that helps overcome things like, I'm not smart enough to do this, or I'm not an eloquent speaker, or, you know, I don't know. I mean, God was very clear when he says, hey, strike the rock and this is going to happen. Hey, you know, the water's going to turn to blood when you do this. And, you know, I think when we take a step back and look at that and go, okay, all right, I trust you, then all of that kind of falls apart and all the excuses kind of just get put away as much as they can. Right? I mean, we're never going to be perfect here. So, yeah. Man, I thought you guys had some awesome... And you know what I really want to think? The indicator piece to me, I didn't really put that, but I do want to clarify this very quickly for this. And hopefully you think about this, because as I'm processing through this podcast, as we're going through it, I'm like, God, that is a perfect way to think about excuses. Like, that's an indicator for something, and I need to stop, pray about what that is showing me. I think if you did that, like... Wow, that would be huge, massively powerful for you to get through. So, and I didn't even know you were going to say it, but it's great. I liked it a lot. All right, so good job. So that's it. Thanks for taking the time to explore how to tackle excuses with your life with us on the F4 Podcast today. Please follow us on social, like and share the podcast if you think this can be helpful and or entertaining to other people. Maybe this is entertaining. I don't know. We would love some specific feedback so that we can improve in providing content that's helpful for you. Even if it's something that you're like, hey, this is what I want to hear about. Can you guys tackle that? Man, send it to us. We'd love to do it, because most of the time it's us coming up with topics, and I'd love to hear from you. I think we'd all love to hear from you and what you wanted to hear from us. So thanks again for listening and taking the time to either listen or watch us today. We look forward to being with you soon again here on the F4 Podcast.